ஓம் சஹனாவவது சஹனௌஹுனக்து சஹவீர்யம் கரவாவஹை தேஜஸ்வினாவதீதமஸ்து மா வித்விஷாவஹை. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. ஓம் பூர்ணமத பூர்ணமிதம் பூர்ணாத் பூர்ணமுதச்யதே பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவாவசிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. ஸ்ருதி ஸ்மிருதி புராணானாம் ஆலயம் கருணாலயம் நமாமி பகவத் பாதம் சங்கரம் லோகசங்கரம் சங்கரம் சங்கராச்சாரியம் கேசவம் பாதராயணம் சூத்ரபாஷ்யக்ருதௌ வந்தே பகவந்தௌ புனஃப் புனஃ. ஈஸ்வரோ குருராத்மேதி மூர்த்திபேதவிபாகினே வ்யோமவத்வ்யாப்தேஹாய லக்ஷிணாமூர்த்தயே நமஹ. ஓம் பார்ஸாய ப்ரதிபோதிதாம் பகவதா நாராயணேன ஸ்வயம் வ்யாசேன க்ரஸிதாம் புராணமுனினா மத்யே மஹாபாரதம் அத்வைதாமிருதவர்ஷிணீம் பகவதீம் அஷ்டாதசாத்யாயினீம் அம்பத்வாமனுசந்ததாமி பகவத் கீதே பவத்வேஷிணீம் யம் ப்ரஹ்மா வருணேந்திர ருத்ர மருத சாங்கபதக்ரமோபநிஷதை காயந்தி யம் சாமகா த்யானாவஸ்திதத்கதேன மனசா யோகினஹ யஸ்யாந்தன்ன விதுஸ்ஸுரா சுரகணாஹ தேவாய தஸ்மை நமஹ. From the verse number 6. Natad bhasayate suryah na shashanko na pavakah yad gatva na nivartante தத்தாம பரமம் மம மமைவாம்சோ ஜீவலோகே ஜீவபூத சநாதனஹ மனஷ்ஷ்டானீந்த்ரியாணி ப்ரக்ருதிஸ்தானி கர்ஷதே. நகத் பாசயதே சூர்யஹ ந சசாங்கோ ந பாவகஹ. சூர்யஹ தி சன், சசாங்கஹ தி மூன், பாவகஹ தி ஃபயர். நகத் பாசயதே, ஆல் ஆஃப் தீஸ் டு நாட் இல்யூமின் தி செல்ஃப். Lord Krishna here in this verse is describing the nature of Paramdhama. The ultimate nature, here the Dhamma is in the sense of the light or the consciousness. What is the nature of consciousness? What is the nature of the self? This is a very typical way of describing it. Natad bhasayate suryah. The sun does not illumine the self. the consciousness. Na shashankah. Shashank moon does not illumine the self. Na pavakah. Pavakah, the fire. The fire does not illumine the self. Then who illumines the self? So these are the well-known luminaries that illumine everything in the world. Later on in the 12th verse, Lord Krishna will say, Yada dityagatam tejaha jagat bhasayate akhilam. This light in the sun and the moon and the fire, they illumine everything. But here Lord Krishna says that those illuminators of the luminaries that illumine everything also do not illumine the self. Meaning that the self does not require to be illumined. Understand? What it means is, the self, the consciousness, does not require to be illumined. Everything else requires to be illumined. That is something that is jaram, paraprakasham, meaning that requires some other light to illumine, to shine. Vaisva prakasham, that is something that shines on its own. So this difference must be understood. That which is self-revealing as against other things that require some other light or the light of consciousness to reveal themselves. Like this flower, for example, cannot reveal itself. The flower can reveal itself only when it is illumined by the light of my eyes. If my eyes are closed, then this flower cannot become the object of my consciousness. So we can say that the flower cannot reveal itself on its own. It can reveal itself when it is illumined by the light of the eyes. Eyes themselves are illumined by the light of the mind. Because if the mind is not behind the eyes, then even though the eyes may be gazing at a given object, if the mind is not behind that, there is no perception. So we can say that the eyes in turn are illumined by the mind. But the mind also is a product of matter. Subtle matter, no doubt, but it's still matter. The mind also cannot reveal itself. Mind also shines in the light of consciousness. This consciousness, the self, first illumines the mind. The mind in turn illumines the sense organs such as eye. And sense organs such as eyes in turn illumine these objects. That is how these objects can become known to us. Or the objects of the world can become the object of consciousness, or they can be known, they can reveal themselves only when they are illumined. So difference between what shines on its own and what requires something else to illumine. For example, in a dark room, for example, if this hall was pitch dark, there's no light here at all, then a lot of furniture, a lot of things that are here, they cannot be known, you know, because they cannot reveal themselves. They require this light in order to be known. Whereas, how about a lamp? So you bring in a lamp, even in a dark room, the lamp does not require any of the lamp because lamp is self-revealing. Like a pot in a dark room cannot reveal itself, but the lamp reveals itself. In that example, the lamp can be called self-illumining, self-revealing. And the pot is not self-illumining. In Vedanta, what does not illumine itself is called jadam, paraprakasyam, inert, unconscious. And what can illumine itself is called Chaitanam, or the conscious. In this universe, all the substances, all the objects are jada, meaning that nothing whatever has the capability of making themselves known unless they were illumined by the light of consciousness. Just as in a dark room, this furniture cannot make itself be known unless it is illumined by the light. And so also, the objects of the world cannot illumine themselves, cannot reveal themselves unless they are illumined by the light of consciousness. How does the light of consciousness reveal the objects of the world? The consciousness first illumines the mind. The mind in turn illumines the sense organs. The sense organs in turn illumine the objects. Explained in Dakshinamurti Sutra, Nana Chidra Ghatodara. That is an example. Anyway, similar example. So this is an important thing to know. That everything, whatever is created, is inert, is unconscious, meaning has no, is material, is objective, and does not have the capability of revealing itself, making itself known. And thank God for that. If the flower had, see what it means is this, if the flower could reveal itself, you can never be without the awareness of flower. If the objects of the world were self-revealing, if they did not require any other light to reveal them, then they will always become the objects of our awareness. They will always be known, understand? You will go crazy. All sounds will be known, all taste, all smell, all colors, all forms, everything will simultaneously make itself known because you are self-revealing. It is not so. In the Dakshinamurti Sutra, this example is given of a dark room. Maybe there is a big jug or a jar. In the stomach of the jar, there is a very bright lamp. But the jar is closed, even the mouth also is closed. So even though the lamp is shining, the lamp does not illuminate anything outside. Suppose you make a few apertures or openings in that jar, then the beam of the light from the lamp, they emerge from those apertures and illumine whatever falls on their path. Similarly, the consciousness is shining in our heart. This body is like a jar. And therefore, consciousness and the sense organs are like those apertures from which that consciousness is shining out. Chakshuradi karanahi. So, that's why, like sense organs, eyes, etc., through that, the light of consciousness goes out and illumines the objects of the world. This is arrangement. This is something to be noted. What is the difference between the self and the non-self? What is non-self? Everything other than self. Only self is self-revealing, self-shining, and everything else is non-self-revealing, shining in the light of consciousness. So when Lord Krishna says the sun does not illumine that, the moon does not illumine that, the fire does not illumine that, meaning that you do not require the illumination of sun or the moon or the fire to know the self. Because self or the atma or consciousness is self-revealing. Meaning that you can never be without the self-awareness. Even in deep sleep also, the self always shines in its own light. In Panchadashi, the example of the theatre lamp is given. Imagine a theatre like this, and there is a very bright lamp in the ceiling, illumining the hall, and the stage, and the audience, and whatever is taking place on the stage. When the performance is going on, when musicians are singing, and the accompaniments are playing, and the audience is watching and responding, all of this is illumined by the lamp. When the show is over, everybody leaves, the hall becomes empty, then also the emptiness also is revealed by the light of the lamp. The lamp shines ever. The lamp does not depend upon the audience or the objects of illumination. If they are there, the lamp illumines them. If they are not there, lamp continues to shine. In fact, lamp does not illuminate anything. All the lamp does it shines in its own light. Illumination takes place by the way. In the presence of lamb, everything gets illumined. Not that lamb wants to illumine. Not that there is any kind of a volition on the part of lamb that let me illumine these things. The lamb can also think, I will not illumine, let me see. But no, to shine is the nature of the lamb. And therefore, whatever is within the range of that lamp automatically gets illumined. So also, self of the consciousness is like a lamp. And our mind, and our sense organs, and the whole universe is like a theater. The mind is compared to a dancer who dances on the stage. The organs of perception, they are compared to the accompaniment, the musicians who play the music according to which the dancer dances. And the objects of the world are compared to the audience which is watching this. This is the theater of the whole universe. And there is one lamp that illumines the whole universe. What's a lamp? Lamp of the self, consciousness, self-shining. It has no freedom not to shine, understand, because to shine is its nature. Sun has no freedom not to shine because to shine is its nature. Bulb has a freedom not to shine because to shine is not its nature. It shines because of something, and when the cause goes away, the lamp ceases to shine. The lamp shines because of electricity. There is a cause. When the cause goes away, the effect also goes away. But, so electricity illumines the lamp. If there is no electricity, the lamp does not shine. Similarly, the mind illumines the sense organs. Mind is not behind sense organs. The sense organs cannot perceive. Sense organs illumine the objects such as flower. If the sense organ is not functioning, like eyes are closed, then the flowers cannot be known. How the self? Rupam drishyam lochanam druk tad drishyam druktamanasam drishyaha dhivrutya sarve sakshi drugeva natu drishyade. This says Vedanta that all the objects are, they are all objects of perception, and the organs of perception are like the perceivers, like the witnesses. The organs of perception also are witnessed, the mind is a witness. Mind also is witnessed, and the consciousness is the witness. So who illumines consciousness? If mind illumines sense organs, the mind also gets illumined. So the example is, every illuminator also is illumined by something. The lamp illumines the parts. Lamp is illumined by the eyes. Eyes are illumined by the mind. Mind is illumined by the consciousness. If every illuminator is illumined also, who illumines consciousness? Nobody. Drugeva natu drushyade. Consciousness shines in its own light. It is self-revealing, self-effulgent. One principle, the self of the consciousness is self-effulgent. And, of course, a lamp will have a range, you know, within which it can illumine the objects. If there are things outside the range of the lamp, lamp can illumine. But what's the range of consciousness? It's all pervading. So whatever there is, whatever shines, is all due to the light of consciousness. Tad dhāma paramam mama, tad mama paramam dhāma. Lord Krishna says, there is a supreme nature. Dhāma here means a light, my supreme light of consciousness. And Lord Krishna says, that is myself. And where is that? That's my own self. So by these words we are also told, the self does not need to be illumined. You don't need to use your eyes and ears to see the self, or to feel the self, or perceive the self, because self cannot be perceived by the eyes, ears, etc. You cannot visualize the self conscious by your mind, it cannot be the object of visualization of mind also, because mind itself is inert. Just as a lamp illumines the part, part cannot illumine the lamp, so also the consciousness illumines everything, they cannot illumine the consciousness. the sun, the moon, the fire, all these three conventional luminaries are all illumined by consciousness, but consciousness cannot be and doesn't have to be illumined by them. Yad gatvana nivartante. Knowing yad gatva, yad jnatva, knowing which? Knowing the self as a self-effulgent consciousness, self-revealing consciousness, which illumines everything, which is boundless. All boundaries are also illumined by the consciousness. Even the boundaries also are all illumined by consciousness, which is boundless, limitless. Knowing that consciousness, the boundless, the limitless, the self-effulgent, self-revealing, self-shining, self-existing, self-sufficient. Because that which reveals itself does not depend upon anything else, is independent. Meaning it is not limited. It is limitless, boundless. The consciousness, the self that is limitless, boundless, is Purnam, is complete, is all-inclusive. For example, the light emanating from these bulbs include all the objects that illumine. The consciousness illumines everything, meaning it illumines, it includes everything, all-inclusive. Knowing yourself as such, knowing yourself as the self, as the consciousness, self-revealing and revealing everything else. Self-revealing means that which does not require to be revealed, but that reveals everything else. That which illumines everything else, or the principle of illumination or consciousness, that is your nature, knowing which, yad jñātvān anivartante, knowing which, there is no sense of limitation anymore, because knowing the self as limitless, the sense of limitation cannot come back again. Today the sense of limitation comes back again, I try to forget, it comes back again and again. Moment I become conscious of myself, the sense of limitation seems to come back. Because, and next verse will explain, I know myself not as I should. That the self is, I know it in a wrong manner. That is why the sense of limitation comes back. When the self of the Atma is known as it is, then, yad jatva nivartante, reaching where or knowing which nani vartante, one does not ever come back to the sense of limitation. Tad dhāma paramamana, that is my supreme abode, meaning that is my limitless nature. This consciousness, this self, who is all inclusive, who is limitless, self-shining, its story is now being told to us. Now the next five verses tell us the story of this self. You can call it Brahman or God, his story is being told now. So we already read the seventh verse. If consciousness, limitlessness is my nature, then how come I feel a sense of limitation? This question always arises. Swamiji, who is feeling a sense of limitation? Who is this jiva? Who is the samsari? Who goes through the cycle of birth and death? Who is the one who feels unhappy or sorrowful or sad? Who is that one? It is the same one that was described in the earlier verse, the same limitless one. The self-shining, self-effulgent, the limitless, boundless, the complete self, or God, or Brahman, alone is going through the samsara. So the first line of the seventh verse, mamaivamsho jiva-loke jiva-bhuta-sanatanah. Here Lord Krishna in the Vedanta explains the reason for a sense of limitedness that we experience. To explain how the limitedness that we experience is not right, it is not reality about ourselves. The most important thing to understand is that the sense of limitation I feel about myself is not the reality about myself. It is the false perception of myself. So Lord Krishna says, mamaiva amsaha jiva loke jiva bhutaha sanatanaha. Amsaha, a part. Mamaiva amsaha, in fact, my own part. Not somebody else's part, Lord Krishna says, the limitless, his part. Jiva loke jiva bhutaha. Jiva bhutaha, in the form of, who is this jiva? Lord Krishna says, the jiva, the limited individual, is a part of myself. So who are we? Part of Ishvara. But the question is, does it mean that Ishvara Brahman has divided itself into countless parts and has become this part? If we are part of Ishvara, does it mean that Ishvara is no more Ishvara now, that is split into all these parts? Ishvara no more remains limitless? Does it mean that the limitless has divided itself into all these countless parts, which is what called jiva? Jiva pranadharane, one who sustains the life is called jiva. So one who lives, this living entity, the living being. Now question is, so there are some teachers who take this statement literally and say that Ishvara has split himself into a number of parts and every jiva is a part of Ishvara. Is it what Lord Krishna wants to say? What is the Vedantin's interpretation of this? So Shankaracharya says, amshaha iva amshaha, as though a part, not a real part. Because Ishvara or Brahman is not capable of dividing itself. You cannot divide, can you divide space, for example? You know the space? By creating walls in the space, is it possible to divide the space? If there are a number of parts in the space, this is part A, part space A, part space B, part space C, and like that, you know. So there are so many parts there. Does the space really get divided into various parts? Although we do use the expression part space. You know what does part space mean? Meaning that the space that is confined to the parts. Is it so? So when you look at this part, it appears as though the space is confined to the part. And another space also is confined to another small part. As many parts are there, so many part spaces are there. So at the first sight, it creates in us the notion that the space has divided itself into a number of parts, which are called part spaces. So there is a little part space here. It's called jiva part space. Amsha, part of the total space. But understand that the space cannot have parts. You cannot divide space. Is it that a number of parts divide the space into a number of parts? They don't. The space is not within the part is within the space. However, the part seems to have the capability of creating a notion, an appearance, or a delusion in our mind that there is something called the part space. That's what the part does. Meaning that when we give reality to the part, then it looks as though the space is divided into number of parts. Similarly also, this upadhi, this body-mind-sense complex is comparable to a part. And consciousness is comparable to space. Consciousness cannot be divided. Who will divide it? The walls are gross. They cannot divide space which is very subtle. A gross thing cannot divide the subtle. And so, consciousness, the self, is subtler than the subtlest. What this body is extremely gross, how can it divide? And another important thing, you know what is this part? This part is nothing but the space itself. The space itself has modified itself to become a part, Akashad vayuhu, vayuhu agnihi, agnihi apaha, adbhyah prasivi, prasiviyam. So prasivi means this earth. And the clay. So clay is the product of space. Space is transformed into clay. There is nothing but space. Similarly also, what is the body-mind-sense complex? Nothing but the manifestation of consciousness. That is beside the point, but just as the parts cannot divide the space, they can create the notion of division in space. The parts can create the notion or the delusion, a wrong, false notion of division in space. Similarly also, this body-mind-sense complex is comparable to part and the consciousness that is limitless. Of course, in true sense, the consciousness cannot be divided, but this body-mind-sense complex, which is what called upadhi, that creates the notion that the consciousness is divided. Therefore, I know that I'm a conscious being, all right, but where am I? I'm inside. Whenever we want to point out ourselves, what do we say? I did it. So what's the notion of I? I who is inside this body. I know that I'm a conscious being. I don't have doubt about that. But I'm a conscious being who is confined to this body sense complex, who doesn't have a presence outside that. I'm a little part of consciousness, a speck of consciousness, a small, insignificant part of consciousness, and therefore I'm constantly suffering from a sense of smallness or limitedness. But then, is there smallness or limitedness about myself? Is there a reality of myself? No. But it can happen. Imagine this little part, the space within this part. Suppose that space thinks that I am really separate from the main total space and I am separate from this other part space. Suppose. Space is lucky that it does not have a human mind. But suppose space had a human mind. Is it lucky or not lucky? I don't know. Very often human being feels that we are very unfortunate. Swamiji, it would have been much better to be a buffalo or a cow, there are no problems. There's no choice. More evolved we are, more problems we have. Most evolved we are, most problems we have. Is it good or bad? To have sorrow, is it good or bad? To have problem, is it good or bad? We have these complexes, we have this sorrow, this sadness, this misery in our life. Is it good or bad? Tell me. It is bad. Well, had there been, have you ever seen a buffalo meditating? Have you ever seen a buffalo going to a Vedanta class? Because buffalo is no sorrow. Buffalo is no sadness, no depression, no stress, and therefore does not see the need of evolving from there. Buffalo is not sensitive to that which can cause stress. Buffalo also is a very limited being, much more limited than human being, but buffalo does not have that self-consciousness about the sense of limitation, therefore it is blissfully ignorant about the sense of limitation, therefore no sorrow. But no sorrow means no effort also. Do you think Arjuna would have ever asked Lord Krishna about this knowledge if he did not feel sorrow? No. Not only did Arjuna feel the sorrow, he found no solution to that sorrow. Then only he surrendered to Lord Krishna. Until then he tried everything that he could. He tried to find justification for his sorrow by Dharma Shastra and things like that. When he could not find any justification, then he knew that this sorrow, I have no answer to this. That's how he surrendered to Lord Krishna. Meaning that the human being strives to evolve, strives to grow only because there is that sense of sorrow or limitedness within ourselves. Had it not been there, had we been blissfully ignorant, we would have remained ever a samsari. So therefore, sorrow is a great gift that Ishvara has given us. Really? Pain, I was saying yesterday, pain is also a gift that Ishvara has given. Pain in the stomach, is it a gift or not? No pain, then no life. Suppose there is strong acidity in my stomach and normally it burns and I feel the pain, severe pain, then I go in for some medication. Suppose acid was there and no pain, you know what would have happened? My stomach would have been destroyed. While walking, suppose I happen to strike against a stone or something, and there is severe pain in my toe. Had there been no pain, nothing would have been done to repair it. Maybe my toe would have suffered a fracture. I would have no pain. I would not know there is a fracture. In fact, pain is very important because it leads us to attending to that. Although human being always wants to avoid pain. I'm not saying that you should invite pain, but when pain comes, let us learn from that. Pain, nothing wrong in pain. It's there, it's a reality. What's the reason? Reason is ignorance. So ignorance is explained in the first line of this verse. Mama eva amsho, mama eva amsha, a part of mine. So Shankaracharya says, amsha, eva amsha, as though a part. What is as though a part? Even though the part is not a reality, but then I think that I'm a part. For some reason in me, this false notion has arisen that I'm a part, I'm small, I'm little, I'm insignificant, I'm limited in every way. Somehow this complex has arisen in me. In whom? The one who in reality is limitless. In the one who is in reality limitless, somehow the complex that I am limited has arisen. How does it arise? So everybody gives their own explanation. Vedanta gives a very clear explanation. Just as in this poor little part, that I am a small, insignificant part space, that complex can arise on account of identification with the part. It's called upadhi. On account of identification, meaning taking the part to its own self, the part space feels small. Even though in reality it is all pervasive. But still it suffers from a sense of littleness. And then always suffers a complex. Moment it comes in contact with the bigger part, it feels miserable. Not only has to come in contact, just think of a big part, that's enough. Feels miserable, always living in misery. So what does this poor thing do? Try to avoid, to forget that misery, keeps itself engaged in some kind of an activity so that it doesn't face that smallness. That activity, all the time, the effort is to run away from the sense of smallness, not facing it. So a lot of our activities are meant for escaping their sons of smallness. Like, I don't know what to do with it. It's just a nagging sense of smallness or limitedness which seems to bother me, which makes me sad and makes me depressed. So they give you drugs and stuff like that when other means are not available, applicable. Normally we apply the regular means. We have tea and coffee and then candy and TV and movie and sport and this and all kinds of activities we have developed. And then we have the phone, smartphone, iPhone, iPhone 4, iPhone 5. The iPod and iPad and all these are wonderful things, but when they become escape distractions, that's the problem. When they become addictions, internet is a great power, very powerful thing, but it can become addiction. Not that bad agents fall of internet, is my problem that I am seeking for some addiction, understand? When I'm addicted to something, then that occupies my mind so that I don't have to face my smallness. So I'm looking for ways to get addicted, to forget myself. I'm a self-conscious being and I want to somehow not become self-conscious. But self is self-shining always, so I can't escape that. And so somehow my mind, through my mind I try to escape, keep my mind engaged in something, in activities. When you come to ashram, then there are problems. Sometimes you find that people living in ashrams are more sad than people in the world. So I was better off when I was in the world and samsara. He says, you know, this people is miserable. But what can I see in ashram? There is no escape distraction. You can't run away from yourself. There is no golf here. There is no tennis here. Not that I am commenting about golf. Nothing wrong in those things. It's all. But if it's an escape distraction, then it's a problem. Golf is not the problem. Escape distraction is the problem. I don't feel good about myself, I seek some distraction. In the world, enough activities are available to distract ourselves. In the Gurukulam, no activities are available to distract ourselves. Therefore, you have to face yourself. And that is why a lot of misery, which is there inside, which I was avoiding so far, I have to face it. But thank God that Vedanta teaches us the means of dealing with it and resolving it and falsifying it and coming out of it. That work has to be done. We cannot escape that work. Anyway, so here Lord Krishna is explaining why, or in what is the reason why we feel a sense of smallness or limitedness and suffer? So what is the cause, what is the one cause of our suffering? The sense of limitedness or sense of smallness is the one cause of our unhappiness. There's no other cause. We have said this millions of times, that in our life there's no cause of sorrow other than my feeling a sense of limitations. The limitedness makes me feel helpless. That is the only cause. Nothing that happens out there need to make me unhappy. Meaning that to be unhappy, I do not need anything other than myself. What the world does is, it can push those buttons which I am trying to avoid, that it can do. Meaning that the world makes me face to face my sense of limitation by pushing buttons, and then I feel miserable and I blame whoever pushed that button. But the wiring was not inside, what do the buttons matter? You can push those lights as much as you want. Suppose wiring has been removed, then? The wiring is there, what's that wiring? The sense of limitedness, sense of smallness, self-non-acceptance. Now those buttons are very effective. People know how to control this person. They know how to provoke this person. Swami, this person makes me, I don't want to get angry, this person makes me angry. Because person has discovered by now what are those buttons and therefore how to make this person angry. See, you're again angry. You're always angry person, you know. Then you start blaming you and things like that. What games are going on everywhere? And then you blame, A blames B and B blames A, and that's all goes on. Not knowing that. And the problem is, within ourselves. What is the problem? Ignorance. So the word ignorance, Swami, where is Gita does not use the word ignorance, but amshaha, a part. Mamaiva amshaha. The previous verse, Lord Krishna describe who he is. And the self-effulgent consciousness, tad-dhāma param, that's dhāma swarupam. That is my mama swarupam. That is my nature, my true nature, essential nature is what? Consciousness. That illumines the whole universe. The sun and moon and fire all shine because of me. I illumine the whole universe. I'm limitless. Mama amsha, the amsha, the part of that limitless. Now you can't be limitless if you are can be split into parts. You see, anything that can be split into parts is made of parts. When can you split something? When something is an aggregate entity. When it is made of parts, then you can subdivide into parts. Is it not so? Anything that is savayam, that is made of parts, can be divided into parts. But space is partless, so it is not made of a part, therefore you can't divide it. The world of consciousness, partless. So it's not available for division. And who will divide it? You can't divide yourself. There's no second entity to divide also. So therefore, parts and divisions are not possible. If Ishvara is Ishvara, Brahman is Brahman, then Brahman, in order for Brahman to be limitless, the limitless must necessarily be also partless. Anything that is created is always an aggregate of different parts, assembly. An assembly can be subdivided into parts, but this is uncreated. Esha ajaha mahanatma, the self is unborn, birthless, not in effect, not a product. So on one hand, Lord Krishna says that, hey Arjuna, understand that limitlessness is your nature. But Arjuna says, but Lord, I feel so limited. Therefore Lord says that, you are like my part. Meaning that, the feeling a sense, feeling a part, feeling sense of smallness is as though, meaning it is a product of ignorance and there is something called ignorance. Why is there, Swamiji? Well, it's there. So to explain the part, Upanishads tell us a story. So kamayata bahusyam prajayayeti satapo tapyata satapastaptva idagum sarvam asrujata yadidam kincha tat srishtva tadeva anupravishata. So, you think whatever there is first is created, all this body, mind, sense complex, everything is all kept ready and then tasvishtva tadevanu pravishatha Ishvara Brahman entered into all this. So, to explain the sense of smallness and limitation, this story that is being told was that Brahman, limitless, which was satyam jnana, so kamayata, whither saha, satyam jnana vanantam Brahma, which is satyam jnana vanantam limitless, that desire, let me become many, and therefore the limitless desire to become many, meaning let me appear as many, cannot become many. So like this parts, is this theme occurs again and again in the Upanishads. Yatha sudiptat pavakat visfulingaha sahasrasha prabhavante sarupaha. Tathaksharat vivada sumya bhavaha. Just as from a blazing fire, number of sparks emerge, similarly also from one Brahma or immutable, all these jivas have emerged. That's Munduka Upanishad. The Brihadaranyaka also gives a similar example of fire and sparks. Is spark a part of fire? Yes, Swamiji. The fire splits into a number of sparks. What is a spark? Spark is a little part of fire. Is it not so? Is it or is it not? Spark is a small little fraction of fire. What is fire? depends on what we call fire. What is fire? Does fire have a shape? Yes, Swamiji, it has a shape like this. Oh, that's the flame that you show. But does fire have a shape? Does it have a form? So how did the formless get divided into forms? Understand that even when the fire appears as number of sparks, there is no division in fire. What is fire? Fire is the principle of heat and light. That's called fire. What is a spark? Also heat and light is not so. No, but Swami, a spark is small dimension. The dimension is not in heat and light. The dimension is because the wood got split into a number of carbon particles, and fire associated with a carbon particle is called spark. The division is not in fire, division is in upadhi, in the wood. That looks like division in fire. Just as the division is one part is different other part, but then it creates the notion of division in space, and so also the fire, when it associates with a small piece of wood, then it looks like a spark, and spark, third spark. Division is in wood, division is not in fire. Just to explain our sense of smallness, how the sense of smallness that we feel is not a reality about ourselves. This is very important. That is the point Vedanta wants to make again and again. Understand that any time I feel sad, it is because of a sense of helplessness or sense of smallness. There is no other reason for sadness. But Swamiji, this happened to my son, this happened to my spouse, this happened to my this. Anything happens anywhere. So many things are happening in the world, nothing seems to touch us. When certain things happen, how they manage to touch us? Because they manage to create in me a sense of loss, a sense of smallness again. A sense of smallness, sense of helplessness, sense of loss. But can there be... If there is a puddle of water, then you take out one bucket of water, the puddle is reduced. You take out a few buckets of water from the ocean, is there any reduction? No. There can't be reduction actually in the self, but I feel reduced only because of the ignorance creates the identification of the body-mind-sense complex. And of course this is small, this body-mind-sense complex is insignificant. And look at the tragedy in our life. I feel insignificant and constantly strive to become significant. By strengthening my body and by increasing my knowledge and by all kinds of things I do, I can stretch out the upadhi as much as I can. I'm going to become limitless at this upadhi level. By doing something with the body, something with my mind, something with my intellect. Nothing wrong in doing things. What I'm talking about the intention behind that. If the intention is there, by this I'll become limitless, it is futile. Do keep yourself healthy, do become strong, do become more knowledgeable. Nothing wrong in any activity. Vedanta has no problem with anything. It is what motivates that. That is where what is the motivation behind that? You mean are you trying to become limitless? Are you trying to become big? Well, that you can never become, because however big you become, you still remain small and insignificant. Nobody at the level of upadhi, at the level of body, can feel that I'm great. You can feel for a few minutes looking at some other fellows, all right. Look at somebody else and, the same problem. So this fellow in presence of this feels very big, and then something else comes along, Same smallness. It's a matter of comparison. But what is our life? It's called bhava, a process of becoming limitless. How? By trying to make my upadhi, the body, mind, sense complex, by trying to make it limitless. What a struggle. What a futile struggle. Then life passes like that. Some way, if you are lucky, then perhaps you will be exposed to some teaching and realize that the whole process is futile. We are going nowhere. Like a boat that is already anchored. You know, they started to row the boat at night. Whole night they rowed. Next morning they see, where have we reached? The same place. Why? Because the boat is anchored. It is not, the anchor has been not, you know, removed. So human being is trying and trying and trying. Mama evam so jiva loke jiva bhutaha sanatana. Therefore Lord Krishna used the word sanatana. Now, sanatana is the visheshanam, is the adjective of amshaha. Sanatana amshaha. Sanatana means eternal. See the meaning of the word. Sanatana is eternal. Eternal means what? Not limited by time. What is eternal? That is no beginning, no end. That is eternal, is it not so? No end, eternal means. Means no beginning. Means not limited in time. So what is not limited in time should not be limited in space also. Or any kind of other limitations. Sanatana means limitless. Eternal means not limited in time. If not limited in time, means it should not be limited in space also, because what is limited in space also is limited in time. So time, space, limit is not there, that means it is limitless. So limitless amshaha, look at this. Now this is a contradiction right there. Amshaha means a part, which means limited, so my limitless part. So thus, by using this word sanatana, eternal, Lord Krishna here says to us that this amsha or a part is really nothing more than a notion. And so this sanatana, the limitless, which is thought to be a part, meaning that our sense of limitation is a false perception of ourselves, is a false sense of limitation. It is not a reality about ourselves. We should, if nothing else, all the time remind ourselves. The limitedness is not, but I feel limited, whether you feel or not, it is not real. My gut feeling is I am limited, whatever your feeling is. So that is aparoksha jnanam is required. This feeling of limitation is so deeply rooted, that's why it takes all this time. That we have to hear, listen to this millions of times. And not only just listen, every time the sense of limitation comes up in the mind, deal with it, resolve it by reminding the mind, hey, this is wrong, this limitless is feeling limited, this is not right. Don't justify my reaction, don't justify my anger, don't justify my, you know, retaliation, don't justify these things, because all of these is product of ignorance. Mama evam sho jiva loke. Even if knowledge does not take place that I am limitless, one thing we can be quite sure, that the sense of limitation is not a reality about me. That will resolve 90% of problems. This is called mithya. Eva means mithya, meaning that the sense of limitation I am feeling is mithya. That's the word applicable right, very clearly. Like a rope snake, you know. The stock example of rope snakes, where a rope is mistaken to be a snake. Snake is a false perception about the rope, a projection upon the rope. And so also the limitedness is a false perception or a projection upon the self, not a reality about the self. Snake is not a real, is not real, rope is real, and so also the limitedness is not real, the limitlessness is real. So, before I can see the rope, first thing I should know is that the snake is not real. So all my fear goes away. Most of the samsara goes away. Even to know the snake is not real, then I'll bring in the torch and show there. Otherwise, I am shivering. I have no courage to bring in torch also. I just want to run away from there. At least I understand that this snake is a false perception, I have the strength to get a torchlight and show there, and the knowledge takes place. Similarly also, dwelling upon this fact, the sense of limitation is not a reality of myself, and also reminding myself that all my worries, anxieties, stresses, sadness, all of these arise from a sense of smallness. Otherwise, nothing matters to me. If I was limitless, nothing would have mattered to me. Nothing matters to ocean. Take away a few buckets of water, does not matter to ocean. Ocean doesn't worry, what will happen if it does not rain tomorrow? No worry. What if that river does not bring water? No worry. What if this fellow takes a few buckets of water? No worries. Buckets of water will be taken away, that will happen. Meaning life will be what it is. Things will come and go. There will be loss and gain, success and failure. Nobody can avoid that. Right now, success, I want to hold on to that. Failure, it's a constant struggle. Failure wants to come, I don't want it. Success wants to go, I want to hold on to it. That is it. Agama payana anitya tam sitiksha soharata he bharata agama payana. They are all impermanent. They come and go. And therefore, let them come, let them go. Whatever happens, let it happen. Titikshasa. You put up with the things. So before the knowledge is putting up with, then of course there is no putting up also. Mama yavamsho jiva loke. So this verse explains to us the sense of smallness or limitedness that we experience about ourselves, as to how that is a false sense of smallness. In reality, I am Sanatana, I am eternal. Okay, we'll continue after a coffee break. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyave. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah.